Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So last week, Javier, we spent a good amount of time trying to figure out what was going on, why they did what they did, and what they could do to make All Out feel bigger than had they not given away Moxley beating Punk in 3 minutes last week. And we didn't even know for sure it'd be Punk right away. You know, in the post show, word came out later that was a plan. By process of elimination, it had to be the plan. There was really nothing else they could do. And it indeed is on a rematch. Punk challenging the undisputed AEW champion Moxley. Moxley issues an open challenge. Punk comes out, basically retires again. Ace Steel, who I remember watching Punk come out to the ring with at Steel Domain shows way back in the day, even before Punk was in ROH. And he came out and talked him into getting fired up and deciding to, you know, put his future ability to walk his dog on the line in a title match, perhaps prematurely, before he's fully recovered. But Punk's all fired up for Chicago. So it's on. Javier, what do you think about the journey we've been on and how it was executed tonight?
Personally, I thought it was unnecessary. Different people's mileage may vary, but I thought that the diversion at the end was unnecessary because the promos that both Moxley and CM Punk cut, the stuff that they did at the end of the promo, once they got past talking about what had happened in Cleveland, that was the best part. When they were just saying, you know, I'm a badass and I want to kick your butt. You know, that was the stuff that was the best part of both their promos. With Moxley firing up and then with Punk going into the crowd. So you could pretty much just have eliminated everything else, because I thought that the Punk early part of the Punk part was a little bit too melodramatic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and I'm a person who likes melodrama, but you need to be invested. And since I'm not really, wasn't really invested in Punk's journey, you know, it was just melodrama and the whole sappy, you know, oh, you know, what are you doing? And win one for the Gipper kind of, you know, moment. I wasn't feeling it. And then the Moxley thing at the early part of it kind of felt like he was kind of feeling out the crowd, wasn't really sure how hard he should go at Punk. So he was kind of felt a little bit wishy-washy at the beginning of his promo until he just started talking about, you know, wanting to win. So I think that, you know, it was a needless, detour that you really didn't need, unless it was part of Moxley's ego, because he has mentioned that he hated the interim in front of the title. So unless that was to placate his ego, that's pretty much my feelings on that.
Yeah. I wrote my report at pwtorch.com. I think that worked, or I think that worked. You know, you can interpret that how you want. I didn't love it, but I do think it worked. I'm with you on the melodrama. There was a little bit, I mean, if you're into Punk, then you want to see him, you know, just bare his soul and take on this emotional roller coaster ride and all that. It does seem, yeah. I mean, sometimes I just think, okay, you know, enough about you. Let's just fight. But I know it's storytelling and wrestling and all that. And I think Punk's good at it, but it feels a little, I don't know if melodramas were, but just drama queen, you know, like somebody might say, Critical Punk might say.
Yeah.
And then I don't think it matters. So I think the emotions are there. And I don't think it's going to affect the buy rate. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. I mean, I think however we feel about the journey they took to get there, I think had they just talked at each other the last 2 weeks, video package, history piece, video, whatever. I mean, then I think they draw the same buy rate. I think doing this, we're not going to give you the match. Punk might retire. His foot's too injured. He came back too soon. Larry needs walks. But no, the match is on. Okay. I mean, the same people are going to buy or not buy it. So I say that at the end. I don't think it made a difference. But my issue is, if his foot was that badly injured last week so easily. And he's got, and he finally told us about his injury. You know, he explicitly on Dynamite explained what happened. And he had all these screws and plates in his foot. And he wrestled after he broke his foot and pulverized his bones. And then he came back too early. And he's acknowledging all of that or admitting all that. Why is he in, and he was ready to just retire. Why is he suddenly, because they still said, don't be a quitter, is he suddenly competent to fight? I know Punk said he was cleared. But the current 100%, the new 100%, as he put it, might not be good enough. And it's just like, what does that even mean? Like, if your foot was so hurt that you threw one kick and lost, how is it going to be better less than 2 weeks later, where you can go at Moxley, who's in his prime and just badass and ready to kick your ass? And they didn't really explain that. Like, I just didn't come away from this thinking there should be any belief that CM Punk isn't brittle and older and past his prime and not – like we see in USC a lot, some great fighters from the past just hit that spot in their career where somebody's younger and better and they're injured. And to me, that's the feeling I was left with. Now it's pro wrestling, and I think people will just be emotionally invested and want to see the hot, rabid crowd and these two iconic personalities battle, and some of the details of the storyline won't matter. But if we're to talk about the storyline, I mean, I think there's, you know, some things that – don't make a ton of sense in the end in terms of the journey they took us on. Javier.
Unless he's implying that Moxley was right and that he used that as, you know, it hurt and he used that as an excuse that, oh, I can't, I'm not going to be able to deal with it. And that might be it. Cause, and then he gets fired up by Steel and then he's going to, you know, overcome that and then win on Sunday. So that's about the only way you could really put it, but, you know.
But do we want to tell the story that Punk was looking for an out and is a quitter, but when he's in front of his fans in Chicago, he won't be?
Yeah, not for me, but, I mean, for some people are like, oh, you know, the people who are, like, on board with him is like, oh, he's doubting himself and let's get over. I mean, you know, he's stepping all over Hangman Page's gimmick with that, but, you know, but, I mean, I could kind of understand it. And I don't think the whole thing really detracted so much from the story. It's just that if you're not invested, it didn't add to it. And it's, you know, anything you would say would detract is what's the term for opportunity cost would be the only thing you lose there. But I don't think it lost. And I think for the people who are already hot for the whole situation are probably going to get hotter for it. If you're already lukewarm, you're lukewarm. But hey, you know, but I say the final parts of both their promos really, like, you know, jazz me up and, you know, wanting to watch this match. And that's, for me, all they needed to do.
Yeah, like I think we're on the same page in the sense that I don't think anyone who wasn't going to buy this or didn't care about Punk or didn't care about Moxley or didn't care about Moxley versus Punk are going to care more because of this. But I don't think they're going to care less either. It just was maybe in the end, you know, you mentioned opportunity cost. Did they, if the buy rate isn't going to be different, if we agree to that, stipulate to it, and whoever, we'll never know, did popping a rating, getting above 1 million viewers last week, because you're giving away the match, bring some people back to AEW Dynamite who might not have watched last week or this week, who watched last week and then wanted to see this week what the fallout would be, and now they've pulled them back in because they can't believe Punk lost in 3 minutes. They had this nice main event with all kinds of action last week. This week, a good episode of Dynamite, I think, in terms of hyping all out and just being an entertaining towards the wrestling. Did just more people watch, and maybe that's the difference now between beating last year's number or not, is giving away the world title match last week, having more viewers than they would have had, and a certain percentage of them will now buy the pay-per-view who wouldn't have.
Well, plus you also took those people on the journey of, like, the mystery of what's going to happen today. And I mean, Moxley took me on a little bit of a journey when he started talking about somebody else. You know, he started saying someone else from another company, from, like, New Japan. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was like, I went into a mantra of, like, please be Okada, please be Okada. And mm-hmm. then he mentioned Rocky. I'm like, oh, please be Okada, please be Okada. Because, I mean, that was.
I think he meant Rocky as the intermediary.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. When he said Rocky, because they're in the same part of the same faction. So that's why I was like, please, you know, that like doubled my please be Okada, because I mean that would have been the only other thing that would have made, like, sense for All Out had Punk been legitimately injured. Because that was the only question I had leaving last week, was did they do this because Punk legitimately can't go?
Right.
In which case I could expect, at that point I was like, okay, maybe it is going to be somebody else and it's going to be, you know, and the only one that I would possibly think would be Okada. I thought Ospreay also briefly, but I forgot that he was in the main event tonight, so that wasn't going to happen. But yeah, I mean, that was the only question of the mystery of whether, you know, that was the reason, because otherwise it had to, if he was good to go, it had to be CM Punk here in Chicago. I mean, that's just, you know, it's
quite that's the thing. I don't know if Punk's 100% or not. If he's not, they've told a story that sets up the potential for the match to be built around Punk being grounded for a lot of the match and not being – it looked like he's in his physical prime. So they can tell the story that Punk can't put weight on his foot, can't maneuver as well, but still tell a good story and have kind of a brawl. But Punk would be limited if he is – worried about his foot or his foot hurts or he's not as agile or it's still injured. And he just is genuinely coming back early because he doesn't want to miss All Out in Chicago. And he's going to tough it out. And so part of why they did what they did last week and this week could be just to lower expectations a bit or at least prepare people for a main event that's different. They've established his foot is weak. And so Sunday, if he has to protect himself by selling his foot early, they've created a backstory and it doesn't just take the wind out of the sails of the fans who are expecting a classic. Obviously, Moxley and Punk got fired up and people are expecting a classic, just a wild physical brawl and bloodbath. But everyone is bracing for the possibility that Punk's foot is too hurt for him to go 100%. So maybe that's also one of the reasons that they did what they did, just manage expectations.
Yeah, plus it's Moxley, so I'm not worried about the matchup because, I mean, if this were Ospreay, where I would expect, you know, where he would have to move around a little bit more, that'd be a different story of Punk against Ospreay. But against Moxley, I mean, just a walk and brawl, like, you know, really done really well. I'm sure they could pull that off. So, but yeah, I mean, I am expecting a lot of that leg selling because that's, you know, it's pro wrestling and that's kind of what you know, it's what it's going to be. It's going to be a lot of selling of that leg.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. Well, let's pause, introduce the show, and talk with callers. We've got Eric Kroll calling in from the building, and we'll be talking with him as our on-site correspondent, too. Just such a big weekend coming up with Clash at the Castle Saturday afternoon and then All Out Sunday night. A big weekend. Labor Day weekend used to be a nice time to, you know, have a weekend away, and pro wrestling has taken that away from all of us. But you know what? When the shows look this good, I'm fine with it. I think a lot of wrestling fans are too. It's a whole new tradition. Like wrestling used to be on Thanksgiving night, and now and they moved away from wrestling being on like holidays, and now here we are with AEW bringing it back and WWE trying to counterpunch a little bit. So let's let's introduce the show and get on with things. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 31st, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. You can read the PDF copies of that dating back to the late 1980s as a VIP member. It's a vast library of contemporaneous week-by-week coverage of this fascinating industry. And if you're not a VIP member, go VIP, and you can march through those back issues in PDF format or alt-text format on our year-by-year listing on our ad-free VIP website, pwtorch.com/govip. And the latest issue of the newsletter will go out tomorrow with the latest happenings in AEW and WWE leading up to the big weekend. Our VIP members can read the PDF and alt-text issues online, and we also mail out paper copies for our paper copy subscribers. Full details on that at pwtorch.com/papercopy. So the other voice you hear is Javier Machado. We will not be doing a roundtable with Javier and Javier later. That would be impossible. We don't even get to hear his music, but we get him for the full show. Javier, the host of the New Japan Pride podcast and a frequent guest on this show. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Always happy to join you, Ed.
Yes, excellent. So let's get on with it. Let's get to calls and we'll get to emails later, too. If you want to join the people already on hold, the number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad when you call. That flags you on our switchboard. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. I'm very curious to hear what you all thought of the journey we've had on the last 2 weeks with Punk and Moxie. Are you more interested, less interested, no difference, or you don't even know? You just know you're ordering the damn thing. Or not. You just know you're still not. Whatever it is, let's hear from you. We love first-time callers. We love our regulars. We love infrequent callers. Whoever you are, give us a call and get in line. All right. We will begin with Dean in Birmingham. Dean, thanks for calling. What's your take on Dynamite tonight?
I'm like you guys, I'm really scratching my head here about the John Moxley, CM Punk thing, and I'm just like, really? But I mean, like you said, it could have been a kind of like a the two could have been in the ring with Jim Ross or, you know, somebody kind of back and forth. Why am I gonna take you down at All Out? And, you know, Moxley tearing him down by his foot, and sort of like a debate thing going on, and why he's the best, why you're gonna, you know, go down at pay per view, and I'm gonna win the belt once and for all. They're gonna know who the champion is, but anyway.
Well, Dean, you're recapping the promo, but what did you think of it? Just tell us what you thought of it.
I thought it was really cheesy. It was the cheesiest thing I've ever seen in wrestling. I couldn't believe it. I was disappointed.
Now, Dean, are you normally a Punk fan, or do you think he – and are you speaking specifically of his part, and you thought that he was – being overly dramatic and that was cheesy? Is that what you're getting at? And if so, are you normally a Punk fan and this was
being
too far?
Dramatic, over dramatic, cheesy. I've never seen Punk like this before, but, you know, followed him even in ROH and WWE and all that, but to see him, what he did tonight, just over dramatic, melodramatic, I agree with you.
Are you normally a Punk fan, though, or are you someone who kind doesn't really work for you?
I am a big CM Punk fan.
Interesting, okay.
I was a big fan of what he did in the other federation, but it's different in AEW.
Were you planning to order, and you still are? Are you not ordering it? Like, where are you as far as that goes?
I'll probably go to a friend's house and watch it with him.
What else is on your mind about the show?
Well, once again, you know, talked about FDR last week, and here we are again. You know, they're a good tag team, and they're over, and they've got all these belts on them, and yet they're left off the AEW video. The Young Bucks are on the video game, but they left FDR off their AEW video game, and I know FTR, they're not happy with that. And then also very interesting, Kenny Omega did a video with Colt Cabana, and the Young Bucks will do these YouTube videos, and Hangman Page was with Colt Cabana, and I was like, well, you kind of see where they are with who they like or their love fest and who, you know, their type of clique and who they like and who they're against. And anyway,
all right.
It comes down to, you know, these guys from the past or, you know, the former WWE guys, and then you got these guys, hey, we're AEW guys, and you can see and understand about the backstage, all the fights and arguments and the drama going on, and everything
going on.
Does
that make you less of a fan? Does that make you less of a fan, Dean? Does it affect your enjoyment of the product?
Yes, no. I mean, there's certain people I enjoy watching, but then it's starting to just kind of It's like they're turning wrestling, trying to be more like a video game type thing going on here instead of just like wrestling and just telling good stories, telling good, you know, having good storyline, good shoot. I mean, where's the buildup? I can tell a difference from watching the other show and this show, how they do the big buildup to, you know, having a big payoff leading up to the pay-per-view and why it should be special. Why should you care about this guy or that tag team and making it special and having a big pop and, you know, actually caring about it. But,
all right, Dean, I want to throw to Javier on this. Javier, the politics of FTR and the Young Bucks, it seems to be more of a topic. And then you have, you know, the Colt Punk stuff. What do you think about how Tony is handling the, you know, whether it's childishness or just the natural stuff that comes with the business? You know, I've said there's always issues in wrestling locker rooms. Some are a little more harmonious than others. Sometimes they're not harmonious, but we don't know. We don't get details. Other times they're above average harmony, but a couple things will jump out that aren't, and it makes it seem like things are falling apart. I've heard from people aware of the state locker room, whose opinion I trust, saying it's not great, but it's not as awful as some of the headlines would indicate. It's not spiraling out of control or anything like that. But it doesn't, in totality, it doesn't reflect well if it seems like there's some pettiness and unnecessary public exacerbation of things that ideally would remain private and the public face would be more professional. How do you feel AEW and Tony Khan have handled that? And do you think it affects business positively or negatively when that's kind of the buzz?
Yeah, when it comes to FTR, one thing I want to mention before I go into the thing, I wouldn't worry too much about them not being in the game because some of the stuff that they said was kind of, I used to work in close by the video game industry. Some of the stuff that they said was almost like code speak for like, we're going to be the DLC. So, I don't think that I think FTR is going to end up being in the game at some point. But when it comes to the actual acrimony in the locker room, I just think that the whole, like, the reason we hear about it is because of some of the sniping on social media and stuff. And I think that, for me anyway, that's kind of like a bad look where you're like airing grievances to try to get the public on your side. And then, you know, because I'm a more liked wrestler, so I'm going to air this one issue and just like, you know, and it's a lot of the way that's done that's passive aggressively with little taunts here and there and that sort of thing. For some people it works, you know, and you could harness that to draw, you know, to draw. But like, I felt kind of like, you know, that was like one of the first times experience with that was the Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart situation.
Yeah.
And while it was compelling TV, I also kind of felt icky watching it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and while that might work for some people, I think it does end up drawing some people away. As far as how Tony Khan's handled it, I think he was kind of just not really paying attention to that aspect of the in-locker relationship. I really do think that it's very likely that Cody Rhodes was handling a lot of that and smoothing over a lot of ruffled feathers. And then with him gone, I think the toxicity just ended up, you know, growing. It started leaking out with no one to like, no intermediary. And, you know, I think it's a good thing that he put, I think it was Tony Schiavone who's being put as head of talent relationships. So having somebody that you can, you know, air this stuff with, I think it's a good thing. But I think for the people who are like really plugged in, because I mean, like your casual fan's not going to really know the stuff is going on, and you'll hear, you know, some, you know, snipes back and forth on TV. I think that's the worst is when you actually bring it onto TV. But you'll hear some snipes here back and forth on TV, and then you know, a casual fan won't know, but it's the fans that are like either really plugged in or mildly plugged in. Those, I think, you know, so it'll probably rub some people the wrong way.
Yeah. All right, I want to keep rolling through calls. Our number, if you want to get in line, is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. All right, let's bring Ashley onto the show. Ashley, thanks for calling. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going? Javier, it's
really good
to chat with you. The only thing that sucks, Javier, is we can't hear the jingle now later on. I love that jingle. It tickles me every time. So, but it's very cool to have you.
We're taking requests.
You're the man,
here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Thank you, Ashley from Virginia, for requesting the Javier jingle.
Just made my night, guys. I'm just more happy I'm pressed now. And you got me for VIP for at least the next year, man. There you go.
Awesome.
But
thank you.
But yes, guys, thank you. So first, I mean, the main topic is, of course, like the Punk Moxley thing. What I'm thinking going forward, and this may be kind of like crazy, so just kind of hear me out. What I think in the direction they're going to go in is still, for me, like I much rather would have like preferred like the actual story build-up, because for me, I was looking forward to the stories that they were going to tell, because I kind of pretty much knew the match was going to be great between Mox and Punk. But I was obviously looking more towards like the actual story and what these guys were going to, like history they're going to reach after and things like that. But what I think we make it at All Out is maybe a return of MJF, because now we again have two WWE guys in the main event at All Out fighting for the title. And that was kind of his main gripe. I mean, obviously besides the money factor. And maybe he can kind of like excuse his comeback by saying like, you know, the following week on Dynamite, MJF can be like, he worked it out with Tony. He got the money he wanted, which is his, again, his main gripe, if I'm not mistaken. And he's here to kind of, like, right the wrongs. Not just, I don't know if you want to go, like, the stay the AEW route or anything like that dramatic, but I don't know. To me, it just kind of, like, it reminded me of MJF. I'm personally not the biggest fan of the direction they took. Again, I much probably would have preferred, like, the story week to week, but I don't know. And before I kind of throw it back to you guys to get your thoughts on my crazy idea, it just didn't make sense, the whole injury thing. And like you guys had said last week, it was a different foot that he kind of favored and had gone down with last week. So it was just kind of weird. Like, why are you – I mean, I'm happy. I'm a big CM Punk fan myself. I flew out last year to Chicago to be there for his rumored return. So I'm definitely a fan and happy he's sticking around, but it's just kind of weird. Like you guys said, it just doesn't make sense to me. So am I like just really crazy, or what do you guys think?
Javier, what do you think?
As far as that stuff with the foot, I'm not, because I've heard that come up a few times, and it was his planting foot, right? That supposedly he was the one that he started selling after that.
But yeah. You know what? I mean, if he has a pre-injured foot, he's probably going to kick with the one that isn't hurt, or it's his natural kicking leg. So he kicked with the right leg. But if the left foot was broken, I'm just trying to create like a story to believe in here. It's not impossible to imagine that planting that foot and throwing a high kick led to one of those screws or plates or something, you know, getting injured. It just feels like that should be something that they sort of acknowledge, maybe, so people aren't going, well, that was weird.
Yeah, and with MJF, yeah, I'm – If he's, you know, if they have smoothed things over, and if he's got a longer term contract, because I do agree with Todd Martin when it comes to, you know, you don't want to start putting him, you know, if you only have him for one more year, you don't want to really start building up MJF to the moon and then, you know, and then lose him in a year. That would be insanity. So if you've restructured his deal and given him a new deal, and you have him for the next 4 or 5 years or what have you, then yeah, I mean, I'd love to, you know, I think that if you, as a matter of fact, if they do have that, if they do have him signed, it just makes sense for him to come out at the end. I don't know about like what kind of story you would tell, but they've already had a personal, you know, he already has a personal in with CM Punk. If it's CM Punk, which I really strongly feel that CM Punk is winning. So, I haven't gone through all the permutations in my head yet, so don't hold me to it when you read the primer. but that's my early feel for it. And yeah, it would just make sense for MJF to come out and then just, you know, essentially do what was it, Moxley taking out Jericho during like one of the early pay-per-views, or, you know, one of those where the champ gets, you know, taken out, like as he's walking out, that would just make sense to start building up MJF and CM Punk. Cause I think that would be the, probably the best, one of the hotter matches that you can get. But again, that's under the assumption that they've settled things between them.
Wardlow's interview, talking about how MJF just messed up what was supposed to be a big weekend for him with all the drama and stuff. It was like, if you're on the side that, you know, the reason Tony's not talking is he doesn't want to give any attention to this, you know, this guy he had a falling out with, and MJF's silent because whatever he was planning to do backfired and they're at an impasse. Well, that Wardlow interview backs that up, unless you think, you know, Wardlow's just, you know, talking about how it affected him, regardless of what's going on with Tony and MJF, because he's not even included in, because, you know, Tony and MJF are, you know, keeping everything to themselves. If there is a plan for him to return, and they think they can just, you know, heal those wounds afterwards. But I don't, I mean, as a sidebar, if I'm a promoter, I don't want to work my own locker room. I want the trust of the locker room, and I want them to trust me and not think that they're going to be the victim of a storyline or left out of something that, you know, seems like a shoot, but no one's explaining whether it is or not. And then, because it makes it easier to then gather them like they did last week and say, hey, let's be together. Let's work together. We're going to be around for a long time. And, you know, talk to me about your problems, not the media, not social media. That works better if you're not part of this elaborate ruse with MJF, if that's what it turns out to be. So, and I think a lot of wrestlers would feel that way in the end. All that said, if MJF and Tony have mended fences or always were together on this, or at some point, you know, came to an agreement, obviously MJF being a factor in the match is a way to get out of this without the red hot Moxley suffering a loss in Chicago that cools him off. And this is, I mean, I'm really intrigued actually by this, because I don't really imagine either guy beating the other guy clean, because if Punk wins, yeah, the crowd goes crazy in Chicago, but you've taken something away momentum wise from Moxley, who just feels like he's the guy to go with. I mean, he's not the shiny new toy that, you know, Punk's a year in now. Moxley's been around longer and already had a run, but it was a lot, you know, it was during the pandemic. I don't see people walk out with the type of moxie, to quote Nick Bockwinkel, that Moxley has. And why mess around with that? Go have Punk do something else. So to me, MJF maybe is involved enough so that Moxley gets the win and then Punk has a non-title feud with MJF. Is that better than having Punk injured or not, 100% or not, take away something that feels like real momentum with Moxley? Ashley, your thoughts on that, and then Javier, you chime in too.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, so what I was kind of thinking is MJF can, and of course with the referee is always distracted, so the referee will be either down or distracted at some point. And again, I'm not really necessarily advocating for this, but it just kind of like my direction that I went in when I kind of seen everything playing out. MJF can kind of can come down, interfere, but cost Moxley the match, have Punk win. Punk didn't really see exactly what went on. He's kind of confused, and then we kind of get, like, the hashing of everything out on Dynamite and then the weeks going forward. So we don't necessarily go right back to MJF and Punk, since they already had, like, I mean, the Dog Collar match was brutal. Like, I don't know how you top that, at least so soon. So you can kind of square off MJF and Moxley, because I don't think they've faced off since Mosh was champion originally, and MJF had his presidential campaign for the championship thing or his, whatever that was, if I'm not mistaken. But that was kind of what I was thinking, because then it kind of gives Moxley something to do, and MJF can kind of solidify the hero role again, because I'm thinking everyone's going to want to cheer for him right when he comes back. But it kind of gets you out of Chicago, maybe the championship back on Punk, so he can go forward with Hangman. They can kind of revisit that and then just kind of go from there.
Javier.
Yeah, well, let me remove MJF from the equation for a sec. The thing about neither wrestler really seeming like they can lose, that's also under the assumption that, because I agree with you that boxing seems like the most red hot thing. Does Tony Khan really see it that way, or is he going to follow through? Because I mean, FTR was molten hot at one point, and now we have a trios match with them and Wardlow for the pay-per-view. So I don't have faith that he's going to protect Moxley in that way. So I could see Moxley losing clean. But and the way that you can get CM Punk, if you're going to go with Moxley, the way you get CM Punk out of that is if CM Punk just puts up such a good fight that he ends up earning Moxley's respect at the end. That way, Moxley wins clean after like a really hard fight, and CM Punk keeps coming back at him. And then at the end, I don't think he'll shake his hand because Moxley doesn't go that far, but does the Moxley equivalent of shaking Punk's hand? I think those are two different ways either man can get out of that. I do agree with, I think you would put MJF against Moxley first, and then, you know, to have him overcome Moxley even by hook or crook, and then before you go into CM Punk so early. But CM Punk and MJF, if he's available for the next pay-per-view, the thing with Moxley probably, you know, pay it off on TV, but like, you know, one of their big shows.
If Punk isn't 100% and they tell a story in a match where that's part of the story of the match, and Moxley wins clean, but Punk puts up a great fight, and there's a nod of respect afterwards between them, and, you know, Chicago doesn't dislike Moxley as much as they just like Punk because he's a hometown guy, although Moxley took some shots at Punk that were pretty, pretty heavy. But still, if the idea is, yeah, then MJF goes after Punk's ankle after the match, takes him out, Moxley comes to his defense. So he's the hero, say Punk, from too bad of a beating from MJF. That sets up, and then MJF kind of earns his way into a title shot with Moxley, or Moxley just demands a match with him. You can get to that match, let Punk heal longer, if that is what he needs. And there's no official word on that either way that I know of. You could kind of get two for one, Moxley first, Punk next, MJF back in a big way. Of course, that's all dependent on all the things we always say, you know, caveats about whatever's going on with MJF and TK. And we'll have to, you know, we'll need hindsight later to decide whether this whole journey made sense or not. You know, just kind of like we are in a short term with last week's show and this week's show. Anyway, Ashley, back to you for any follow-up, or you can change topics too if you want.
Yeah, I'll change topics and then drop off so you can get to other callers. Just the last thing I wanted to bring up was Debbie Morrissey making another appearance here tonight. I was very happy for him, and dude looks like he's in better shape even since the last time we saw him on AEW. So very happy to see he seems to be doing well in life. But I was kind of bummed in a way because he was on my short list for maybe the guys that Triple H would snatch up on the internet scene and everything.
Yeah.
Just feel like he would have been a really good addition for WWE just because it's so crowded in AEW right now. I don't know if he at the official like All Elite graphic or anything like that, but what do you guys think for Morrissey going forward? And like I said, I'll drop off now, but thank you guys so much, and it was cool chatting with you, Javier.
Always good to hear from you too.
Thanks, Ashley. As always, great stuff. W Morrissey, it felt a little weird to have him on the final show before a pay-per-view for no apparent reason. I mean, I'm not like against it. I'm just pointing out don't you want your focus to be on the key matches on the pay-per-view? Save that instead for next week, a sort of a post pay-per-view quote debut or return.
Well, based on something that JR said on commentary, I think they did that as a middle finger to WWE. Because
yeah.
He said that there were words that he was talking to somebody. which makes me think that maybe Tony Khan might have stolen one from Triple H. And since I read somewhere that Triple H, I don't know if this is true or not, because it was just a passing thing I read, that Triple H booked Worlds Collide against All Out on purpose. As a middle finger for the stuff that they did to him when he was doing NXT. So maybe the Wednesday we're seeing revenge for the Wednesday Night Wars.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I mean, and if that's the case and that's the reason why he was on the go home show, I mean, I don't know. I really can't necessarily be angry at that. It just makes for more fun sniping between the two companies.
I mean, you can snipe, but why not stay focused on what sells Sunday and then have him debut next Wednesday? It's still a get. You still got him.
It felt like it was today that there were negotiations, but based on what he said, and this is like him showing up was like a surprise to, you know, that this is the first. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I meant by that. So in that case, like, you couldn't wait until Dynamite for that.
If that turns out to be the case, I mean, I get, you know, AEW got a little thrill out of that. I would still say stay focused on what counts.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, hey, if TK and Paul Levesque are motivated on a personal level to outdo each other, that there's going to be wrestlers who benefit. And in most instances, fans, although sometimes if it gets too personal, sometimes there's hot shotting and whatever that can not be good for fans. But I want them to be fierce. I want them to be like two head coaches in the NFL who just, you know, absolutely positively can't stand the thought of the other one winning a game against them and bring it on. You know, I think that keeps them motivated. So anyway.
And it's cool. Also a possibility that he might be the question mark for the casino battle royal.
I know that I meant to bring that up too. You know, like they want to introduce him because he will be on the pay-per-view and they needed to show that he's there. So when he shows up at the pay-per-view, it's not like what, you know, and they also establish he can just, you know, beat four people up at once. Assuming we call those humans he beat up people. In most cases, they probably are.
I am not going to lie. When I saw them on the TV when they came, I think they came back from the commercial, and they were, I'm like, what is going on here? Wingman on TV? What did Tony Khan lose his mind? What is going on here?
I pretty much knew what was about to happen, just didn't know who would be doing it.
Yeah.
You know, is it Braun Strowman walking out? Is it W. Morrissey? Is it Wardlow? Is it it would be Powerhouse Hobbs. I guess it could be Powerhouse Hobbs. Whatever, you know, just that type. What was I going to say about that? Also, if he shows up in the paper, I can't remember. Anyway, give us a call, everybody. 347-215-8558. Our on-site correspondent, Eric Kroll, coming up in a bit once he's done watching the dark tapings for the special episode coming up later this week. So, in the meantime, we'll continue to take calls and maybe dip into the mailbag too. Scott from Tampa is up next. Scott, thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I want to talk about Mox and CM Punk and just the entire build to All Out. I'm on the fence on whether or not I want to purchase the pay-per-view. And 2 weeks ago, I felt that way up until the promo between Mox and Punk. They, you know, really went at it. Had a lot of intensity, and that got me fired up because the entire build to All Out was very underwhelming. And I said to myself, "Oh, well, now I have a reason to buy the pay-per-view because of Mox and Punk." But then they decided to put it on TV for free last week, which I disagreed with. I don't think it was worth it. I mean, the story turned out pretty good with the story that they told with Mox losing, beating Punk in 3 minutes. Like, it made the perfect sense. And now they're running it back. And is Punk 100% or not? You know, you got alluded to it at the beginning of the show. And, Javier, I disagree. I mean, I don't. No, I should say this, Javier. I agree with you that I do think Punk is winning, but I don't think he should. I think the scenario should be Mox walking out with the title. Honestly, I'm kind of in favor of them doing like another short match. Like, I just don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know I'm saying a lot. I'm not really answering a question, but yeah, I don't think they really sold me on buying a pay per view based on the match and what they've done the last couple of weeks.
What would you have just rather had? Just straight up promos back and forth with Punk and Moxley, a little more traditional build, have 2-3 straight weeks of that, announce the match, and we don't have a week of wondering what the heck's going on. And even if the match has to be shorter or more limited at the pay-per-view, if Punk is physically not able to go, well, we don't know that beforehand, and they just find a way to tell a good story. Obviously, he can walk to the ring. He had a brief match last week. They can be careful with it. So, yeah, I don't know because they're holding the cards closer to vest in terms of Punk's foot and how fully healed it really is.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I would have gone for. I mean, I thought that was a logical story. They couldn't, you know, they went at it the first chance they got. after that fiery promo, and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't be separated. They went back at it again, second time in the night. Like, I thought, like, the story should have been, okay, for the next 2 weeks, Punk or Mox is banned from the building. Probably last week, you know, say Mox is banned from the building or something to try to just keep those guys apart. They could have had a sit-down interview, like, building between on each side. He could have other stars within the company talking about, well, Mox and Punk. I mean, they kept bringing it, Excalibur kept bringing up the point that it's been 8 years or so since Mox and Punk ever fought each other. And, like, why not tell that story? I mean, this story is not bad. I just feel like it's so such a short amount of time. They already gave away the match last week. Like, I don't think they should have went that way. I think they should have done it in reverse, possibly tell that story at All Out and shock people that, oh, my God, it's a short match. Did Punk come back too soon? And then they could have ran it back at Grand Slam next month. I think it's next month or in the beginning of October. I mean, like, why? Like, I don't know. And so based on this match, I'm not certain if I'm going to buy the pay-per-view, and this will be the second pay-per-view in the world where – it's gotten up to the last minute where I'm just like, I don't know if I should buy it. I bought Double or Nothing at the last minute because of the MJF nonsense that was going on. So it wasn't really about the build to the show, to be honest with you. And so now I'm not, I'm not too keen on it, man. And I don't know.
What do you think of the undercard? I mean, we've talked exclusively Punk Mox, a little W Morrissey, I guess. Does the undercard affect your decision to buy the event?
Yes, and that's on my second point. What I was going to bring up was the what was good was the Jungle Boy and Christian. Honestly, I think that this has been the most coherent and well told out story of the undercard of the whole show these past couple of weeks months. And I really like the sit down interview that JR had with those two Jungle Boy said, "You're not wrestling Jungle Boy this week. You're fighting Jack Perry." And I heard Jason Paul bring it up with you on the flagship earlier, like you should be wrestling under Jack Perry. So I think that match, that build, that story has some intrigue, and if I buy it, it'll be more likely on that match. I'm looking forward to seeing Mox and Punk. So I mean, if it wasn't for Christian and Jungle Boy story, then it would be a hard no that I would buy the pay-per-view.
Javier, what do you think about the Christian Jungle Boy story and Jungle Boy mentioning his name, like his non-gimmick wrestling name, and bringing up his father in revealing his name in the context of talking about what his father taught him about being a man?
Well, I think that would have been a lot more impactful if JR hadn't every week called him Jungle Jack Perry. This was like the reason why you don't do that, so that when he says you're not fighting Jungle Boy, you're fighting Jack Perry, you could have been, you know, dumping the, you know, slowly revealing the fact that he is, you know, for those people who did not know that he was Luke Perry's son, or is Luke Perry's son. So you have that. But overall, as far as the build is concerned, I like the story. There have been some missteps in the actual like delivery of the storyline, but I do like the story. And then there's always the Luchasaurus question mark that we're to believe that he's on Jungle Boy's side. Is he not? So, and I think that ends up being a more personal situation if this feud transfers from Christian to Luchasaurus of the two friends, you know, fighting each other. So I do think overall it's a good story, even if the, you know, the certain, like, you know, the writing might not have been the best, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Scott, back to you. Any follow-up?
No, I pretty much agree with that. I guess the last thing I'll leave you guys with is, had it on my Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. I'm looking forward to that match. That's another one that, you know, I haven't really thought of. I want to see them because I like those two. It's a shame that it kind of feel absent the past couple of weeks on Dynamite, that story. And so that's another problem with having too many belts and all of these different stories that all these people in the company with no real sense of direction. But that's another topic for another day. But yeah, Firehouse Hobbs, if he starts, what do you guys do? You guys think that could be a good, pretty good match? And what do you see trajectory for those two guys following this Sunday?
How do you feel about that not getting anything but a passing mention also, Javier, given what we saw last week?
Yeah, I mean, when you're dealing with 14 matches on the pay-per-view,
that's not true.
It is.
Don't lie, Javier.
Three of them are pre-show matches, so I don't think you count those, Wade. Much to Todd's chagrin. But, yeah, there are 14 matches.
Excalibur mentioned like 100 things. How could you not pick it up?
I'm really intrigued on that one, less because of the actual, like, what we're going to see in ring. Cause I mean, they're both good in ring workers, but I mean, when you do have a ladder match involving, Penta, Phoenix, Rouge, Andrade, Dante Martin, all these guys, I don't really expect this to be the most flashiest of matches, but I'm actually really intrigued because these two guys are you know, moving up the roster, and one of them's got to lose. Hopefully, if they don't do something screwy, but one of them's got to lose, and I'm really curious on who they're hitching their wagon to, whether it's Ricky Starks or Powerhouse Ops.
I am too. I wonder if he's figured that out yet. it might be a late call for both of them. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to have time for everything on the one show.
You were talking earlier about you can't see either Mox or CM Punk losing. This is, I think, the one where I can't really see either of them losing because it's going to be interesting.
And I really can't see Punk and Mox both losing, but I think it's like there's something to be lost with both. And so, you know, the deflation of the hometown crowd in Chicago or hurting Moxley's momentum and just going with something that seems like it's working as opposed to what's going on with Punk, which is kind of, you know, iffy, but that depends on some information Tony Khan has that we don't. So I'm intrigued. Scott, anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. Thanks for taking my call. I don't know. I'll have some more days. Maybe there'll be some more things on on Twitter and on the internet about All Out that'll get me excited to want to purchase a pay-per-view. I don't know, but it's kind of lukewarm right now, which is a shame. But anyways, guys, thanks for taking my call. You guys have a great night and a good show.
Cool. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. We encourage you to give us a call if you're listening live to the show. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That lets us know that you want to be on the show. If you hear anything during the show that you want to agree with, disagree with, or add to, that's a good reason to push 1. All right, we'll go next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, welcome. What's your thought on Dynamite?
Hey, thanks for having me. My thought on Dynamite is kind of going along, I guess, with the theme of whether I'm more excited or less excited for the pay-per-view. You know, I called in for the first time a few weeks ago, man, and was just kind of praising what they had done as far as the build with Mox and CM Punk. But as of, you know, the past few weeks, I've kind of cooled off on it a little bit. And I will say that I'm intrigued, but I'm a little less high on what's going on with them as far as the match coming up, man. I just, you know, I would have been cool if they just went ahead and did what they did at last week. If they would have just did what they did at, they could have just did that at the pay-per-view. So, man, I'm a little up in the air as to how I feel about what's going on currently. And, yeah, man, that's where I stand with things.
Javier, any thoughts?
No, I think it was pretty on the CM Punk thing. I do have to give them credit, though. Something I've been calling for a lot is that they had the CM Punk Moxley thing spread throughout the show.
Yeah.
So it did feel like an important, you know, like it was probably the most important storyline. I would like to have also have closed the show.
I was just going to ask that, yeah.
You know, and not, you know, the trios titles, but, you know, it is Osprey and So I don't agree with it. I think I do, you know, necessarily, but I understand why TK would do that.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes it can be a little much, you know, like I think they ended on a good note, but you know, when you've got, Omega and the Bucks celebrating and Ospreay sulking, and it's like the announcers just throwing, oh, don't forget Sunday, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's just like, ah, it's just sensory overload. No, too much. I would have, like, my choice kind of artistically, graphically would have been, or my artistic would have been to put a graphic on the screen and just said, there's so much going on at All Out, and we've talked for 2 hours about it, but the biggest thing is unquestionably these two and what we saw tonight. And it's hard to imagine Punk losing in Chicago. It's hard to imagine the things I'm feeling, you know, I think it was a natural, it's hard to imagine Mox with his momentum and what he did to decimate Punk last week and the questions about Punk's foot. It's hard to imagine Moxley losing. What's going to happen? I can't wait to find out, be there live to find out too on pay-per-view. Just, it's still that main event.
Yeah. Cause I mean, the thing I actually felt leaving out of that, was watching Ospreay sulking, and I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to see when this actually culminates, Ospreay versus Kenny Omega. Is it going to be at, you know, on AEW TV, or is this the match that they're setting up for Wrestle Kingdom? I should not be thinking about Wrestle Kingdom before I think about All Out.
Right, yes. All right, cool. Jay, back to you.
Yeah, this was the first time I've actually ever seen Will Ospreay in action, man, and I was thoroughly impressed. So I, too, am looking forward to whatever they're building with Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay. A couple questions, though. As far as, well, I guess I want you guys' opinion, but, you know, with Bryan Danielson, he just kind of feels detached a little bit from the Blackpool Combat Club. And, you know, where do you guys think that he goes at this point? Because I feel like he was just kind of like red hot coming in and just sort of just, you know, I mean, he had the hot program in the beginning, but, you know, what is his mission statement, as you would say, Wade? Like, where is he going? What is his desired position right now? I mean, like, what is he trying to accomplish? And I think that as you also just noted, like, it often just feels like they don't prioritize or put the focus on anything in particular, man. And, you know, you got, like, these marquee matches, and it's just like they just constantly seem like they're trying to fit everything in, and nothing is made to feel more important or more special. So, you know, I guess that's one of the things that I take from whenever I'm checking out AEW.
Javier, speak to that.
Yeah, Bryan Danielson doesn't seem just detached from the Blackpool Combat Club. He seems detached from AEW altogether. It just feels like he's just coming in to, like, have fun and wrestle. It doesn't really feel like he's really, like, necessarily invested in what's going on around him. He's just enjoying what's in the match, which in a way it's kind of like, you know, what he wants to do. you know, but, yeah, I mean, I've what was the other part of that?
Yeah, Jay, what was the other part of it?
More so that it just feels like AEW does not prioritize making the main thing the main thing. It just always feels like it's so much stuff going on and you don't really you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everything seems to be at the same volume, and when everything's at the same volume, you're getting a lot of, like, feedback and static. That's, you know, what you're getting. So it's hard to really pick out something unless, A, you're really engaged with a specific character from outside, you know, of what you're seeing on the Dynamite TV. So, like, if you're a CM Punk super fan, you're going to be more attached to that. If you're a, you know, super fan for somebody else, you're going to be more attached to that. But yeah, I mean, that's why I said why I did like the fact that they did have those multiple segments between Punk, because that cut through a lot of the noise. And, you know, it felt like it was the most, you know, that it was one of the more important things to pay attention to. As you know, because I mean, like, seriously, I mean, like, all the other stuff that kind of blends in just in the show, like the House of Black that they pushed, you know, the FTR Wardlow thing, pushing the women's match by having that tag team. It that kind of felt like it felt, you know, like into the noise, you know, like you said, it kind of felt like it's hard for it to client to pop out.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for a 7 or 8 match. I guess if there's, you know, 3 pre-show matches, then they're at what, 7 or 8, I guess. Or no, are they at 11 plus 3? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then I think,
At least according to Wikipedia, I'm looking at that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no. And they're usually, you know, collectively on top of it. So I think that's probably accurate. Yeah. There's something to be said for not everybody being on the show and, you know, having that focus and, you know, making that tough editing decision as a booker about what you really think will draw and what counts. But I also know with a roster that big, being on pay-per-view is a morale booster. You know, it makes it seem like you're important, and it can add to the value of the wrestlers in the eyes of the fans if they're on the pay-per-view too. But just like with title belts, there can be diminishing returns. So I don't know. I mean, you know, in the end, people are buying the pay-per-views, and people seem really happy with don't seem upset every 3 months, you know, rough on average. People don't seem upset on average, you know, what, 4 times a year, spending 4 hours watching the quality of action that AEW delivers, even if in the end it's a little overwhelming during the final bit, the final stretch hyping it.
Yeah, I mean, the card is going to be fun to watch anyway. Yeah. You know, watch. I mean, the exhaustion is going to, you know, take a toll on some of these matches. As it happens when you're dealing with that many, but it's still going to be a fun show altogether. I mean, the question is whether can you build up enough of it when you only have really 3 hours of TV, and one of them Rampage is hard to even count since it has a lot less viewers. It's hard. I mean, 11 matches you want to push is not going to be easy to really have many of them, you know, popping off.
Jay, anything else you want to bring up?
Yes. So I am one of those casual AEW viewers that you guys were kind of speaking to earlier. So, you know, I'm kind of not really aware of is there a real situation going on between FTR and the Young Bucks as far as like backstage stuff. And like you mentioned something last week about Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa that I didn't really know anything about. However, I will add that I enjoy not knowing whether, you know, these people like legitimately hate each other or not. Like, I enjoy that aspect of it. And mm-hmm. I also enjoy all of the chatter about there being backstage issues or, you know, not poor morale, but like, you know, a lot of like competitiveness in the locker room. I feel like that's what the business has always been about. So, you know, it only makes the product better in my opinion. But yeah, like I said, I didn't know anything about an FTR Young Bucks thing. Is that really a thing? You know, that they got some type of back and forth going on. And overall, again, I'm fine with the competitive locker room, man. I think that's what you want. So that's really it for me, guys.
All right, cool, Jay. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, what's going on with FTR on the Bucks is legit. What's going on with, you know, Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker's camp is legit. What went on with Eddie Kingston and Sammy Guevara was legit. You know, beyond that, and Hangman and Punk, you know, that was legit. You know, beyond that, I'm sure there's more that we haven't heard of. There might be more that I'm forgetting or have been reported that I haven't heard of. But it's not like out of control. And some of it's just been simmering for a while. I don't know. I mean, like generic sense, Javier, do you like the edge that comes from thinking some of these people are really competitive, and even if it's sometimes petty or needlessly personal, does that add a little extra zing to watching the show and watching the matches? Or would you rather think this is it's a sports team of teammates who get along and they work together to put on great shows, but they're all happy for each other and good colleagues who get along?
Well, let's say you have two wrestlers working snug. I'd rather not know that they hate each other and think that the reason they're snug is because they hate each other.
Yeah.
Now, let's say they do hate each other and I don't know, then, and that's why they're working snug. I'd prefer that because, like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It's been a long time, but I'm not sure if he actually had issues with Stone Cold himself, but the Stone Cold situation, but you know, the stuff between Bret Hart and Stone Cold, you know, because did he have an issue with Stone Cold, or was it just the, you know, Stone Cold character, Bret Hart?
I think the Stone Cold character. I mean, I know there was, you know, Austin resented Owen for what happened to the pile driver and how all that played out. But I mean, Bret's Bret. I don't know that it was any more with Austin than a number of other people.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, cause they worked really well together and
yeah.
You know, so that was one thing, but then when you, like I said, when you go into the Shawn Michaels thing, it's like, okay, well there's this other thing, you know, outside of the whole,
yeah.
the whole yeah. situation. And that was, I didn't even know what the Sunny Days reference was to at that point.
Oh, funny.
So,
yeah.
You know, I was young, so it's like, I didn't find that until a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, and then that's the thing. So, the thing, because the what I'm not sure about the FTR Young Bucks, is that just basically overbooking?
What do you mean? Is it overbooking?
Like, philosophy, like philosophical wise, because is that what it is? That?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it has to do with egos and differences in how people are featured and booked and personalities. At least one side finding the other abrasive and hard to tolerate, and then that leading to tension and hurt feelings.
Okay. Because I was just wondering, because I know that the idea was eventually they're going to face each other, but then they all went off in different directions, and I was not really, you know, I found out later that's because of acrimony between the two teams. But
yeah,
I was just trying to, you know, I didn't know where that came from. I know the other situations. I think Thunder Rosa said she worked snug. to put it
yeah.
put it lightly,
yeah.
You know, issues with that, and you know, we've already talked a lot about the CM Punk Hangman Page situation. So
yeah, all right, very good. Let's go to Ryan in Cumberland next. Ryan, what did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Pretty good show to go into the pay-per-view. First question is on Ace Steel. Do you know why he never made it into the big time? I know he was in WWE developmental, you know, and then recently he just main evented a pay-per-view in Chicago for like a local group. So is it possible maybe also that he might even have a match because he's pretty involved tonight with the storyline?
I'm sorry, I missed who you brought up at the beginning. Who are you talking about?
Ace Steel, who
that's what I thought.
Bought the contract.
Yeah, that's what I thought from context. Is you're talking about Ace Steel? I don't think he's going to wrestle. I think that was just for tonight's storyline.
And is there a reason why he never made it past developmental? Like, is there like something that Cornette didn't him? Or?
You know, I don't really know the story on him. I mean, I will say this: it's not meant to be a dig at him or anything, but I think of the group from Steel Domain Wrestling that I watched on the indie scene, Ace Steel was the one who didn't seem like he would necessarily be a standout wrestler we'd be talking about, you know, 25 years later. I mean, he was fine, but, you know, just personality-wise, it was a little bit generic. So I don't think it was anything. I mean, maybe there was stuff behind the scenes that I even reported on and have since forgotten about because I haven't thought of Ace Steel a lot in a while, but not that I can recall. Javier, do you recall any reporting on that? I just remember not ever thinking that he was, like, destined for great things.
No, I mean, I barely know anything about him. I've heard his name pop up here and there now and then,
yeah.
And now I think about his problem because of his connection to CM Punk.
Yep.
But, you know, outside of that, I've heard his name, and usually like in a more of a backstage kind of deal or a training kind of deal, not a wrestling kind of deal. But the thing is that there's just some wrestlers that, like, may have, like, mechanics down, and they're just, you know, the size of the camera pointed at you is very, really changes things. You know, JD Drake, for example, who was with the Wingmen today, I really liked him when he was on Evolve and the stuff that I saw him doing Evolve. But when you see him on AEW, it's kind of like it makes him look different. Even Morrissey, I mean, Morrissey was a monster, an amazing, like, presence and impact, but it was a smaller arena. he does not seem as, I mean, I'm not saying that it's bad or anything. And I think he could fill into the role because it's, you know, he hasn't been in front of a big crowd in a while, but you know, that level of like owning the room, he doesn't own the arena like he did the much smaller, impact stage.
Yeah.
And it does change with people. And there's some people that like on the indies, they almost seem like they're born and bred for the indies. And like they will be your top guy and the guy you're going to love in your indie promotion. But when you move into a board national stage, something about their charisma just doesn't translate to a bigger camera.
Interesting. Yep. Ryan, back to you.
Heavy question on Kenny Omega. Appears he's wrestling more as a face now, yet he still hangs out with Don Callis. He's a pretty unlikable character on television. Could you possibly see Don Callis turning against Omega, or Omega not getting the babyface treatment that he might get otherwise just because he's hanging out with Don Callis?
Well, Omega should dump Callis. Callis shouldn't dump Omega if that's the direction they're going. But if Omega's going to be a babyface, Javier, like that's, they're committed to that being a distinct, definitive, defined role for him, copyright Paul Heyman, I would think that Omega should find Callis offensive or abrasive or annoying and dump him, kind of in the way they're doing, and we'll hopefully talk Danny Garcia, where it's like, hey, I have my standards, and you're violating them. I don't want to associate with you anymore.
Well, I sort of the same ballpark, different parts of it though. I would be fine with like Callis dumping Omega, but Omega has, because of the fact that Omega's changed and become a babyface. That's fine. You know, like the same thing with Daniel Garcia. That Daniel, he's trying to get Jericho to wrestle fair, and he's trying to change Jericho into a babyface because he respects him for what he's done throughout for the person that he, because I mean he mentioned it, because the Lionheart is in there and you're trying to bring the goodness out of him, but then Jericho just says there's no goodness and then just takes him out. That kind of you getting kicked out by the heel works. But yeah, in respect with the Kenny Omega thing, it almost kind of feels that the story that they're telling is that the reason that Omega is so beat up and dying is because Callis has been running him so hard. And JR even mentioned on commentary when Callis spoke with Will Ospreay, he kind of like hinted that it looks like I think the expression he used, it looks like he's trying to change horses midstream.
Mm-hmm.
Which like in me, I'm like, wow. I mean, you don't say that accidentally. And he's seeing the same thing. Well, I mean, he may not be read into the storyline, but he's seeing the same thing that, hey, is this setting up the fact that now that, physically Omega can't go anymore, is he going to jump over to Ospreay? Kind of what they're hinting at. I mean, which is something I find personally really weird because, Ospreay is still in New Japan and this is going to be, it's going to be interesting on how they play this off. But I think that's the kind of the idea, and that is a more negative kind of way of the heel kicking out the baby face. So I used you up or not the baby face, but to turn the person baby face. But I mean, Omega really hasn't shown anything to show that he's baby face yet. So I don't know where they're going to go with that.
Yeah, I almost felt like Callis was just being sort of, I guess maybe trying to play both sides, but covering up, like almost like being sort of snide towards Ospreay. Oh, good luck this time. I'm sure you'll do better after getting angel's wings last time. And what I worry about is it's none of those things. Ross inferred the logical thing from it, but it was just Callis getting TV time, and it was just a way because they don't trust Ospreay to cut a full promo about Omega for whatever reason, or Callis just wanted to be the instigator and agitator in that they threw him out there to just get some TV time, and we shouldn't read more into it because it felt at most hedging and maybe just more smarmy.
Well, and this is also going to the tournament is going to end up with Hangman Page standing across from those three guys. So we will see how that ends up playing out too. Cause I'm sure that the whole Callis thing also has something. You will probably find out more about the actual disposition of Kenny Omega during that whole thing. Cause I could see a situation where Omega's still the heel and it's the actual Young Bucks who kick out Omega and Callis to join with the Hangman Page.
Interesting. Yeah. What did you just think of? How do you look at last week's beaten down Kenny Omega with the announcers talking about how he's lost a step and now through the lens of what they did as a follow-up this week?
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed the way that it told that story, because last week they were saying, oh, he's beaten down. Look how awful he looks. But then they started the opposite way today, like saying, oh, wow, he looks great today and stuff like that, until Ospreay took off the compression vest and all of a sudden you see all the taping and they're like, oh, my God, what the heck happened? And I don't know, because, I mean, cupping has kind of fallen out of favor. I don't see as many cupping are those, for the people who don't know, those are those little, like, those circular bruises, you know, that was on Kenny's back. I used to see that all the time in New Japan, and I don't know if it's and I haven't seen it recently, so I don't know if it's something that's fallen out of favor. So if it is something that's fallen out of favor, I could just picture him just doing that so you could get that look of, you know, him looking like his body's falling apart. I think that logically the thing that most makes sense is the idea that they're going to essentially blame Callis that he's writing Jericho, because if you listen to Callis on commentary, he's making it seem like, oh no, he's still invincible, he's still the same guy, oh, ignore those bumps and bruises, and that kind of seems like he's taking advantage, he's the promoter taking advantage of, you know, the wrestler trying to get the one more five-star match out of him and so he could cash him out and then leave, which again, like, you know, unless Omega really turns, like, starts showing, you know, traces of a baby face, you don't want it to be the reason that he becomes a baby face, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I trusted the people involved to tell the story as well as the attention we're giving it while trying to dissect it and decipher it.
Orlando's story, more importantly, because, I mean, that might be the story that they're trying to tell. Whether their personality leads to actually getting you to believe it is a different story.
Yeah. All right, cool. Ryan, back to you. I assume you got a third topic.
Final question is on the CM Punk, John Moxley storyline. Can you think of any time in a major federation that they've done the storyline where the champion lost the title because he wasn't 100%? They had Bret Hart, the Mountie. They had it, we know, where Bret had the flu, but they never really followed up because Piper won the title. And I've seen it done on the independent circuit, too, where the guy had the flu and he got beat easily by the heel. But does anything come to mind where that, you know, babyface got his due, you know, because he came back from an injury and, you know, did better the second time around when he wrestled?
Javier.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? I missed the first part of that because I got interrupted.
I was adjusting things to the headphone here, too. So go ahead, Ryan. Sorry about that.
Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, we both...
Basically, the question is, have you seen a storyline before where the babyface, you know, lost real easily from an illness or injury and then did a lot better the second time around? Bret Hart, you know, lost the title real easily to the Mountie, but they didn't follow up, you know, with that because Piper won the title. And I've seen it done numerous times on the independent circuit, but not on the mainstream before.
I wish I had better recall for that because I have vague recollection of that type of thing happening, but I'm not pulling a specific out. Javier, how about you?
I know it's happened. I'm like you, Ed. I know it's happened. I can't think of anything. It is one of my favorite types of stories. They told a similar one with, Ego's previous partner, current Impact champion. Blanking on the name now. It's been a while since I've been watching it.
Josh Alexander.
Yeah, Josh Alexander. He told a similar story with Josh Alexander. Yeah, where he lost. I mean, granted, he lost it because essentially what was a Money in the Bank cash-in. And then, you know, other things kept him away from it, and then he had to basically build back up to win it from the guy who cost him the title. So it's kind of the similar vein. Obviously, it's not due to illness or injury, but, you know, the similar thing where there's a devastating loss, and then you have to basically recover and come back from it. That is one of the best storylines, but I really can't they're loosely telling that story with Tanahashi throughout the last couple of years. Where they've been telling the story with Tanahashi that he loses a bunch of them in a row because, you know, age is catching up to him in New Japan, that he's losing a bunch of matches in a row, that he's looking beat down, and then he ends up, you know, stringing up a bunch of wins together. Now, it's more of a tragedy of a story because then when he starts stringing a bunch of wins together to get himself to a high spot, and then he loses. Because then, you know, he wasn't able to finally come back. So those are kind of stories I love. But, yeah, I can't think of, like, a specific one, like, you know, in with your parameters.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. Ryan, any closing words?
No, I think that's all I have for you. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to get to see the pay-per-view unless the local restaurant decides to carry it at the last minute, which I don't think they're real high on AEW. They tend to be higher on but it'd be if they do that type of thing.
All right, cool. Ryan, appreciate it. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
We will, if anyone wants to hold on or call in as the show progresses, feel free to do so. But we are going to jump to our on-site correspondent, a familiar voice on this show, former Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist circa 1990 and current contributor written and podcast form here at PW Torch in this current year of 2022, Eric Kroll, who attended tonight in Chicago. Eric, welcome. Good to talk to you.
Hey, guys. I know I'm not important enough to get an entrance music song like Javier, but I'm happy to be here. How's it going?
I don't Javier plug ears, but having an entrance song doesn't mean you're important.
Ah.
It just means someone sent it in, you know, so. And I. Although, you know, Eric, you might be talking yourself into getting entrance music, but you won't like it.
Yeah. Real American. Yeah, that's a heel song if there ever was one.
Yeah. Yeah. So how was it? What's your top takeaway? Then we'll throw questions at you too.
So the news coming out of this, after they went off the air, Kenny Omega started giving a generic, you know, we want to change wrestling, hey, Chicago, promo, and United Empire came back in the ring and laid out the elites. So I don't know if they're building in an excuse for I'm in the car and somebody's pulling off to the side of the road here. I don't know if they're building an excuse for the elite to lose the six-man titles on Sunday, but, you know, they Will Ospreay was going to pilmanize Kenny Omega's neck, but Matt Jackson made the save, and then Matt got laid out. United Empire hit their finishers on the Nick and Matt, and then did his hidden blade elbow on Kenny Omega as the Aussie Open held him. So they were laid out before they then taped five or six more matches for a special Saturday edition of the AEW Dark. That happened off live TV. I imagine there's video of it, building heat for a future Ospreay Omega match, perhaps, or giving them an excuse loose Sunday, or both.
Well, Eric, I want to get your thoughts on. We'll get more into the in arena experience to that perspective, but just in general, what do you think? What do you think they set up tonight? What do they want us to think is going to happen? What are they really going to do at the pay per view? Based on, what you saw with Moxley and Punk tonight.
So it was good. You know, Moxley came out and got a, you know, the first time he came out, it was more cheers than boos, but not by much. The second time he came out, he probably got more boos than cheers, even though he was more heelish in the first time than the second time. The Ace Steel thing didn't really work for me. I mean, they probably explained it better on TV, but they just kind of all rushed through.
They got around
and
to
it's
it.
Just a, I mean, just kind of a random guy shows up out of nowhere picking up the contract. I don't know if that was on TV or not. an agent-looking guy. He picks up the contract in the ring after Moxley left it there. And I immediately thought Punk was going to be the guy to come out and pick it up and sign it. And it happened. It just took an hour more into the show for that to happen. And, the Ace Steel thing didn't really work for me in the building. I don't know how it came across on TV. So it worked because the fans liked it, at least in the building. It worked for the fans in the building. Punk cutting his promo after Ace Steel gave him the Mr. Miyagi-style pep talk resonated with me. I, too, was born in Christ Hospital on the south side of Chicago. So I did not have a cord around my neck, as far as I know. But, I really liked that. And, I came back WWE-style. To breathe tonight, like they didn't try and jam-pack 50 goals.
Eric, we're losing. I don't know. Your connection is breaking up just a little bit, but go ahead. I think we're hearing enough of you, but I wanted to let you know that. I don't know if you're driving.
The show felt like it had a little more room to breathe tonight. Did you guys get that sense?
I can imagine being in the building and thinking that because of the video packages. Vignettes, sit-down interviews. But, I didn't watch the show thinking, they're moving from one thing to another too quickly. So in that sense, it's a positive, but I also don't think it felt like it had room to breathe. It was sort of in maybe that AEW Tony Khan compromise sweet spot, which is there's not room to breathe, but you don't feel exhausted or like things were wedged in and not given proper time. What do you think, Javier?
Yeah, I agree with you, because it felt like even the video packages were kind of like, hurry up and get this over. But, yeah, I wouldn't say room to breathe, but it definitely felt more it wasn't like moving from one match to the other kind of thing.
Yeah.
I like that Moxley then came back out to sell the main event of the pay-per-view one more time. It would have been better if they were able to tell the story over, three or four weeks or five or six weeks, right? And, work Ace Steel in if that was going to be the pivot point. It struck me as odd that this guy you'd never heard of suddenly is the pivot point for the big angle and inspiring Punk. But you, Wade, probably loved that they had three different segments to plug the main event, because I know you're a big fan of reminding people of what's the most important thing, WWE style. And I'm not saying that derisively. I just thought, Wade probably likes this.
I felt it was appropriate for the ebb and flow of the emotions. I think you have Moxley first. You have to establish storyline-wise, open contract. Then you got to have Punk come out and address the crowd. And then once the challenge is accepted, it would have felt weird not hearing from Moxley again. And I like that it felt unscheduled, like Mox just barging in to kind of react to it. And that'll work for me. I think, any much more than that would have been overkill, other than Javier and I talked earlier. I think an on-screen graphic at the end after the six-man tag saying, hey, there's a lot at All Out. There's so many reasons to tune in. It's going to be a great show. But the number one thing everyone's going to be talking about for the next few days is this match, the main event for the big title, and have an on-screen graphic of those two, just like UFC would do when they have two of their top fighters against each other. They can talk up the undercard, but the final pitch is a visual of those two who are on the fight poster. And to me, the proverbial fight poster is and the graphics all over social media ought to be, and most often will be, Mox and Puck.
Yeah, and they didn't really have a choice, right? They had to do a hard sell, build, really 1 week build, 2 weeks for the story, I guess 3 weeks for the story, because Punk did a run in the week before to save Moxley. But, they were forced to do the 3 seconds, basically, because they really needed to do the last minute hard push here on the go home show. So they executed that. We'll see to what effect. There were maybe 6,000 people in a 9,000 seat building. The second deck behind the hard camera was almost completely empty, and, you know, they tarp off a lot of seats for the hard camera, but behind the hard camera. And the hard camera I actually learned tonight because I walked over to that section and actually ended up in media row with Zach Adorn and Stephanie Chase were sitting there. And the hard
did
camera...
Did you say hi, or did you say hi, or did you act like you're too a big shot and he can't give Zach
I did
five
not,
a day?
I did not big time Zach. the hard camera is actually three cameras. There were three cameras. It wasn't just one. So I thought, I always interpreted it literally as a fan, like
it
there's
used to
one
be
hard
one.
Camera there. Yeah, it's now it was three tonight. So I don't know if that's normal.
It's
or
weird.
Not,
I think WWE uses. At the last WWE show I went to, TV event, they had, I think, just two hard cams. I don't know if I've heard of three, but maybe I'm just not remembering right.
Yeah. So the crowd was hot just about everything except the women's match. It just, you know, they got a decent response, but it wasn't as good as everything else. So that, I guess, did not surprise me. I think it made sense to put Sheeta over, because she's not been on TV. She's just been relegated to dark for so long, so it made sense to strengthen her. And I don't think they could beat Hayter, because Hayter has been beaten so many times on TV. We needed to, you know, make people forget that she always loses. The booking in that match made sense, even if I was still somewhat surprised by it.
What do you make of the crowd, of the attendance, Eric, as someone who's attended every AEW show in that market?
Yeah, so I think I skipped the Rampage last All Out week. I won't be doing that this week, I don't think. I think I'll be going Friday. But so one of the problems was they put the you could only buy a three pack, right? The single All Out seats sold out really quickly, and so you had to buy a three pack to be guaranteed a seat for All Out. I think they finally unbundled them earlier in the week. My guess would be the travel crowd, one, the travel crowd all came in for Forbidden Door, right? That was a heavy travel crowd at the United venue, seat-wise and just physically. The building is, you know, twice the size of what they were in tonight. I would say, you know, they've run Chicago a lot. I think when they were downtown, the last couple times they were here at the Wintrust Arena, that's the downtown small arena, they probably drew 5,000, 6,000 for Dynamite. So this is kind of on par with that. I think Rampage has even fewer tickets sold. I don't think the pay-per-view is sold out yet, as far as I know. They unbundled the tickets, but there were still some available. So All Out previously was an instant sellout. It probably would have been this time if they hadn't bundled the tickets together. I think for the three shows, I paid like $260 with all the service fees for the three tickets. So, you know, a not inconsiderable amount of money, especially when you just had Forbidden Door tickets. So, the first sign, I guess, that there's sort of market burnout a little bit because they run Chicago so often.
Hey, WrestleTix has, as of yesterday, 9,095 capacity, tickets distributed, 8,345. So I'm sure they're under that now, under 750 available. So, I mean, it'll be a sellout.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it'll be packed for All Out. You know, it's just, you've been there, Wade. It's just not that big, large of a venue. It's the amenities and the facilities, bathroom facilities are just not like major arena, like United Center.
I love it because it reminds me of my first wrestling. You know, because I traveled. I mean, my first shows were in an old St. Paul Civic Center, and I was lucky enough in the early 90s to travel to some of the great wrestling buildings before they got torn down or stopped being used, like the old Philadelphia Spectrum and the Nassau Coliseum and the LA Sports Arena, just like the Chicago Amphitheater. So I love those old buildings. Like, to me, that's more fun than the glossy NBA buildings for a wrestling show. Obviously, they both have their pluses and minuses, but I don't mind it, but you are not factually incorrect here.
Yeah, the merch lines were not long, so that was nice.
Yeah.
The merch line in the back, you know, had hard – they've got a really, like, long amusement park-style fencing, iron fencing set up, So they are clearly expecting to sell a ton of merch on Sunday for All Out, and they've got that pretty well. But, you know, you could just go right through the and get to the front and buy whatever you wanted. The merch, there was FTR shirts and hoodies. There was a Danhausen merchandise shirt. There was CM Punk, of course. And I think some they were selling the New York Subway. It looked like the New York Subway stop shirt, you know, the little circles with the different colors to indicate the subway stops in New York, and which is weird at a Chicago show, but, you know, unique, hadn't seen it before. And they had a bunch of, you know, like generic AEW stuff, including the I Was There shirt and a nice Chicago AEW shirt with the city flag logo that's, you know, CM Punk's, all of CM Punk's trunks and tights. So, I mean, it was merch selection was, you know, you feel like you want a merch superstore for like a pay-per-view type thing. And, it's never quite there for Dynamite. You know, for them being a T-shirt company, you would think you could get a T-shirt for just about anybody. But especially with Chicago being their merch headquarters with One Hour Tees. By the way, if you were looking for Colt Cabana tonight, I saw him. I saw him on a billboard on my way into the show. He's the advertising guy for One Hour Tees, which makes the AEW shirts. I'm now catching the Allstate Arena, the former Rosemont Horizon, where so many WWE shows are held.
Been there. So Eric, what do you think is happening on Sunday with Mox and Punk?
I assume Punk goes over. You know, I expect one of two outcomes. Punk goes over in his hometown, or a MJF returns and costs Punk the match. I mean, Tony Khan is talking about having a full roster on his radio appearance today. I would, you know, or MJF could come out after Punk wins the title and do a beatdown, right? Tony Khan's big, one of his big booking go-to moves is to debut somebody new or to, or to have somebody return, I guess, in a major way, especially at the end of the All Out pay-per-view, you know, what we saw last year with the double debut of Adam Cole and then Bryan Danielson. Bryan Danielson, by the way, he didn't get anywhere near the pop he did last year when he debuted, the crowd was super into his match. He was definitely over in the ring, if not as much on his entrance.
Interesting. Yeah, okay. I was going to say a couple things, but I actually want to throw out Javier here and get you, Javier, to ask Eric anything that's on your mind about his experience tonight.
Hey, Eric, how's it going, man? It's been a bit.
Hey.
One of the things I noticed, there were a couple of MJF signs in the arena. Did you see a lot of those?
I saw one sign when I moved for the six-man tag main event to sit by Zach. I did see a pay MJF sign that was, you know, opposite the hard camera, so I imagine it got on TV.
Was there a guy who was about the height of MJF holding that up?
There was not.
Actually, one of the questions I was going to ask you was if there were any MJF chants or any buzz about him at all, or if it or not. Besides,
were there
I guess,
any MJF
Javier
chants tonight? I don't believe so.
Yeah.
Cool.
Go ahead, Evan.
Because I mean, do you either know if they actually confiscate signs?
Didn't see any signs get confiscated. I mean, there were maybe a dozen signs total, thankfully. I mean, I lived through the mid-90s era of you couldn't see anything at Nitro in the United Center because everybody was holding up a damn sign. And so I'm all for having as few signs as possible.
Yeah, because I would think that because I think I saw three altogether, and I would think that if they do, if they do, I would think that if things had not been smoothed out, that they probably would have confiscated like, you know, the pay MJF signs and stuff like that.
People had signs. I didn't see anybody getting their signs confiscated.
Um, Eric, the what do you expect the crowd reaction for Moxley to be if he wins on Sunday? Like, if they tell a story, Punk put up a good fight, he's still not 100%. That's part of why they did what they did last week, to give an excuse for Punk to lose. Moxley wins, but he wins fair. It's brutal, but it's hard-hitting. And then maybe they do an angle afterwards with MJF, maybe not. But if Moxley were to beat Punk, does a place explode in boos, respectful cheers, mixed reaction? What's your sense of, in other words, has AEW booked themselves into a corner if they want to stick with Mox?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to stick with Mox. I mean, I think they're doing the redemption story. I mean, just they're doing it on fast forward, right? Instead of, ideally, if you take your swing, you come back too soon, you would play that out for 6 weeks or whatever, right? And they just did the fast forward version of it. I can't see CM Punk losing in his hometown to Moxley. You know, it would be a second loss in a row to Moxley, unless MJF causes him to lose. And MJF, I think when we last heard from him, did say he was going to cause CM Punk to have the worst loss of his career, right? Losing in your hometown for the world title would be the worst loss of your career, or you could make a case for that. So if Moxley just pins Punk clean, I think the whole crowd would be stunned, and then they would boo. if he wins and he doesn't know that MJF helped him, that feels flat. I don't know. I still think the most likely finish is Punk raising the belt at the end of the night, and I would be surprised if it's anything other than that. Tony Khan, you know, generally books in the way that sort of makes sense, and the story they seem to be telling is, again, too quickly, but it's the story they're telling, is, you know, the comeback after the injury, and he couldn't do it at first. I mean, they probably would have a little more power if Kenny Omega wasn't telling the same story at the same time, but, you know, doesn't seem to be a lot of quality control or coordination in the promotion at times.
What do you think, Eric, about Moxley's momentum, setting Chicago aside, and having him not just remain champion, given he was champion during COVID, and now he just seems red hot? Even Chicago was, you know, liked him except for Punk.
You could certainly make a case for that. But if you were going to do that, you shouldn't have brought Punk back this quickly, right? You should have saved Punk for Full Gear in November, wherever they're going to hold that. And so they went down this road and just, you know, putting the belt back on Punk, who was supposed to have the belt all summer. Tony Khan does like sticking to his long-term booking plans, and he had to take a detour this summer, but now this is his chance to go back to get off the off-ramp he had to take this summer, and he can go back and have whatever he's planned. I mean, you know, if it's MJF and Punk again, they just, you know, they did that feud for 6 months, probably need something different, right? What would be different? CM Punk holding the title, right? That would be different. And MJF winning it, that would be different. Also would be quite an eyebrow raiser, depending on what their contract situation is with that guy.
Yeah. Javier, back to you. It doesn't have to be about Mox either, or Mox and Punk.
Yeah, I was curious about Morrissey's reaction Morrissey got being reintroduced to AEW.
It was about as tepid as the women's match. It just, you know, there was a little bit of heat, you know, when he started doing his power moves, but not a ton. To me, I didn't quite get it. I don't know if they were pitching him as a heel on TV because he was out there beating up comedy heels. But to me, you already have Wardlow occupying that same lane. I'm not sure why you need Morrissey to do the same thing.
Go ahead, Javier. Yeah.
Oh, you're
yeah, sorry. Yeah. I kind of threw you for any. I didn't know that was your only question.
Did they show any of the videos that we saw? Because normally when the shows I've been to, we would get those in between the when they're changing over from Dynamite over to the Rampage taping. They would actually play all the videos. Did they show you any of them? Or?
Yeah, they actually seemingly somehow figured out how to play it in the arena tonight. So we got to see everything. Hangman Page coming back after they they took out the two potential Dark Order partners, or, you know, Udo, I guess, and Ken. So we saw that. I think the Jungle Boy interview we saw, Jericho backstage with Daniel Garcia. I think we saw them all.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of pop was there for Hangman, Eric? We got to ask you that.
In the arena, he got a pop. He came out, so they taped, after it went up, Dynamite went off the air, they taped about an hour's worth of AEW Dark to air on Saturday night. That, you know how they always, that special Saturday night edition of Dark before
yeah.
the pay-per-view? So they did that, and Hangman Page came out in a six-man tag with Silver and Reynolds. Presumably, they're going to win Friday night, so then this will air Saturday night to give them a second win as a six you know, as a three-man, six-man tag unit. And they took on, I think it was The Factory. And Hangman Page, Buckshot Lariat, and Aaron Solo, who was in there with Cole Carter, the former Two Dimes, and Nick Camarado. John Silver did a back suplex on Nick Camarado, which is as impressive as it sounds, given the height disparity there. So Hangman Page still got a pop. I mean, was it as big of a pop as, you know, last year when he was going for the title? No.
Yeah, that would be surprising at this point if that was the case. I know you said the crowd was into everything, less into Brian, not as into the women. How about the kind of final three matches where we had the Wardlow, NFTR, Quickie, and then the all action Dante Rouge Ray Wheeler four way, without a ton of backstory to that. Talk about those two, and then just also, the crowd seemed like they wanted the main event to go on forever. I might have heard a few people chanting "Fight Forever," and chanting AEW. So yeah, just kind of talk about that second hour and as they wound up Dynamite proper.
So the FTR got a really big pop, bigger than Wardlow's, I would say. I think, did Wardlow change his theme song? I feel like he did.
That type of theme song sounds. What, Javier, do you know? Because it just sounded the same to me, but.
I have no clue. I would have to go back and listen to it. It's so generic.
Yeah, and the old one was "This is Wardlow," and I didn't feel like it was still. I don't know. He just didn't seem to get as big of a pop. You know, he himself, I think, has admitted in a workshop interview that I haven't seen that he felt he was derailed his push or whatever, his momentum was derailed this summer, and I think he's not incorrect. The four-way, I mean, it wasn't announced. There was no setup of it, right? Like, I didn't even know in the building, because I was driving, that these four were going to be in the ladder match. I mean, I figured it out once I got a cell signal again. But, it was just a spot fest, and the guys were, there's a reason they call quarter seven the death spot on Dynamite. That's the quarter those guys were in. And it's just, you know, it's I guess quarter six and seven, maybe a little more quarter six and seven. But, the crowd was just a little bit, they were not as up for those guys as you might have thought, given what a fast pass it was. They still got heat. Fans still liked all the high spots, and it was just nonstop high spots. So, But, you know, there was no build for it, I guess. It seemed like an early Dynamite where they just threw out, hey guys, look, good match. Did they build it up on TV ahead of time?
What would you say it qualified as that, Javier?
They just put up a thing and a picture and saying that these guys are going to be in the Casino Battle Royal. I think that's about all they did. So no, I would say no, outside of just letting you know that these guys are going to be wrestling on Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the main event was. The place is going nuts for that. I don't know what you thought of it, Wade. I know sometimes you prefer more selling in your matches, but it was that PWG style spot fest, and it was we got a lot more of Ospreay and Omega than I would have thought. they, you know, I liked it a lot. The crowd liked it a lot. You know, they were really up for that one. It was, you know, it was the match I came to, and we're getting, they're telling the story, right? The Elite versus Hangman and his new friends. So I think that's the story when I was on a few weeks ago when the brackets came out, I'm like, well, that's a story they could tell, and that's the story they're telling. And with the beatdown, the savage beatdown they got, it could go, it could go either way on Sunday. I mean, I would assume the Elite are winning because then they're going to feud with Adam Cole and Red Dragon, but maybe not
because Fightful's reporting Bobby Fish might be on his way out, so I don't know what's going on with that.
Is Bobby Fish going to the old folks home? I think he's eligible for Social Security.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they could add a different third member, but all bets are off in terms of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they could find a third to stick with Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, right? I assume if that's the story they want to tell.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bucks want revenge, right? After getting laid out and no follow up a few weeks ago.
So a big picture question: did AEW tonight? You've been to so many shows in the kind of home base of Chicago. Is it as hot a company as it ever has been, or you know, within a small degree of difference, or more or less?
No, I mean, I think they hoped they weathered a really tumultuous summer where they had locker room turmoil, top stars injured, and the product just, you know, I don't know if AEW feels less hot or WWE just feels more hot, given that Raw was beating SmackDown in the ratings. It's on cable. Triple H taking over, Vince leaving, so WWE has definitely felt like the hotter promotion. And AEW, you know, I don't know if it's regressed so much as treading water as they were trying to get key players back from injuries. And now they've got a chance to do a reset on Sunday and regain some momentum after what's looking like a pretty good WWE pay-per-view on Saturday in Cardiff.
Right, yes. It's just a good weekend in general. Yeah, both shows in their own different ways, looking really good, and some similar ways, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think you objectively look at the all-out card, and in terms of just key players and matches and where they're at, it's on paper right now, it looks like the weakest AEW card to date, right, in terms of just matchups and dream matches and that kind of thing. I mean, it's not weak. It's just the bar is so high for AEW on these pay-per-view shows, and they all deliver so well and are so well-reviewed, you know, like not unlike NXT's series of takeovers that were so well-reviewed, right? I mean, there wasn't a bad takeover, during the main era there before they rebooted that brand. And there hasn't been a bad AEW pay-per-view yet. So,
right.
You know, probably Sunday night the streak will continue. It's just, even if on paper, you know, it's not bowling you over as a dream matches that you've never seen before. You know, there's hot singles feuds. They have too many matches on the show, and they have too many six mans on the card. But you know, that's AEW, and you just I don't see it changing.
Javier, do you want to ask Eric anything else?
Did Tony Khan interact with the crowd?
Yeah, he came out a couple times, twice maybe. He for sure came out before, after they taped Dark, but before Dynamite went on the air, next Monday's Dark Elevation, he came out and said, hey, stick around afterward because we're going to have some more wrestling matches for you. And, you know, kept it pretty short. And then he came out at the end. Best friends were in the Dark main event against Angelico and Butcher and Blade. And best friends got a win that'll air Saturday. I assume it will be a rehab win after they lose Friday night on Rampage to Hangman and the Dark Order. Danhausen was out there. Tony Khan came out and thanked everybody for coming. And it was encouraged people to come to Rampage. I gotta imagine there's only about five. I think the last I saw in WrestleTix last week, there were like 5,000 tickets out for Rampage. Because, you know, as you well know, I had a full that Rampage in the Minneapolis before Full Gear was quite a slog. It was hard to get.
Cabana was a star. It was like it's the best night.
Yeah.
Best night he's had in AEW. Everyone was into him.
Yeah.
But that helped something about what it was, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and Tony kind of kept it more brief than he usually does, right? There wasn't the big, long, drawn-out thing of Hook coming out, not speaking and eating the potato chip, and Danhausen doing his shtick, or, you know, Cody giving a big Cody speech. There was none of that. It was a lot quicker, and they play the Happy Trails song to encourage everybody to get the heck out of the building. And that's what they did.
Yeah, it sure sends the message clear. There's some parties I've thrown where maybe it would have been nice to have that music to let people know it was time. anything stand out from the dark tapings entering spoiler territory? A little bit, I guess, here for listeners. That is noteworthy or not really. We'll have the results put up on the website.
From the dark tapings?
Yeah. I mean, we got the written report that we'll get up on the website, but anything you want to share from that you haven't yet?
Yeah, the dark before they taped Dynamite was just six matches, and it was news-free. And the dark they taped after had a few more decent matches. I mean, you had the Acclaimed, you had Swerve, and the tag team champs, Swerve and Keith Lee did a squash. I mean, it was really weird because, like, the star power for the Saturday, you know, Dynamite, the Saturday Dark they're going to air, there was a lot more. And it's like the tag champs just felt like, why are these guys wrestling on Dark? They just have not gotten much of a push since winning those belts. And they've got a face versus face dynamic. I don't know if they add the Billy Gunn's kids to that match on Rampage. But sure seems like they should, because, you know, otherwise you got a weird psychology face versus face matchup. But yeah, the Saturday Dark is actually probably worth watching. But probably everyone will be tired after 4 hours from Cardiff and WWE. But you know, the Dark Elevation tapes for Monday, definitely skippable.
Yeah, yep. All right, cool. Eric, is there anything else you want to share?
No, that is it. Thank you.
Cool. You got a big week in front of you, so enjoy the rest of it. Well, you're not going to Rampage, but fun show coming up.
I am going to Rampage.
Oh.
I'll file a report of the 2 hours.
Oh, I thought you said you weren't.
Beforehand.
Yeah,
I'll be there.
Yep. Okay, well, cool. So, yeah, you definitely
All
have
right.
a big week coming up. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate you calling in.
Thanks. Take care.
Yep, you bet. All right. So I asked for and received another call here. Brian to Boston called up. So let's bring him on for his thoughts, and then we'll wrap up a couple quick emails before signing off because we're running long here. Brian, want to fit you in because you accepted my invite to call in. What did you think of Dynamite?
I thought it was good. I have to say, though, I'm kind of disappointed in the title picture because
Brian, we can't hear you.
Hello?
Yep, now we can hear you.
I'm a little... I thought Dynamite was good. Overall, but great.
Nope.
I'm a little disappointed with how FDR is being used, though. It should be the ones Lee and Strickland for the tag titles. And I mean, they're by far...
Brian, unfortunately, your connection is really breaking up. I don't know if you can adjust that at all, but if not, we probably have to not continue the call. We're hearing maybe one out of five words at most. Yep. Sorry, Brian. Feel free to call back. We're doing mail if you're in a different spot, and we might have better luck. Javier, you're still there, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I don't think we got enough from Brian to respond in that context.
Well, I mean, he was talking about FTR and then deserving to be more. And yeah, I agree with him. I mean, FTR was super hot, not just in AEW, but all of wrestling. and, you know, to have him with Wardlow, which is, you know, like he self-admittedly has cooled off against Jay Lethal, and the Motor City Machine Guns, which I assume that Impact is reverse land, because heels in Impact are faces elsewhere and faces in Impact are heels elsewhere. But yeah, with the Motor City Machine Guns. But yeah, I do agree that that FTR definitely deserves more. So
yeah, I agree. Okay, let's jump to let's see which one I want to take here. We'll bring up JB and Detroit Demo, because I do want to run here pretty quick. I don't think it's necessarily the way I would have gone to get Punk Mox at All Out, but ultimately I'm not sure if it will do much, if any at all, damage to the All Out buy rate. So he's kind of on the same page as me. The pros, the match gets to be for the undisputed AEW title. No unification will be involved. This was reportedly important to Mox for some reason. Two, the first match potentially whet our appetite for what will presumably be a much longer and better match between the two at All Out. Maybe. Well, I'm suspected to be longer. What a letdown that would be up here if it's shorter. Three, I like the story that was weaved throughout the episode, exposing us to multiple fiery promos along the way. I think most people did actually know what main event would ultimately go on and All Out. The question was, how will we get there? Which I think can be argued brought more intrigue to the build. I admit I can see both sides to this argument. Five, this was certainly a different approach, and I'm always open to trying new things. I don't think this was such a crazy or bad idea that it becomes an exception to my aforementioned general rule. And six, the ratings bump from last week's match. So, yeah, I mean, I think those are really good pros. He has three cons. The two have already come to blows multiple times, so the thrill of this being a first-time in AEW thing is gone. Two, there was certainly some confusion along the way, particularly with more casual fans. And three, the blurred lines between reality and kayfabe can distract from the bigger picture. Adding to this backstage drama, potentially leaking is generally a bad look for the company. Ultimately, I'm in favor of this approach. I don't remember seeing anything like it in recent memory, and I think the risk is worth the reward. Javier, is there something about just the novelty of taking this approach, regardless of figuring out the totality of the reasons for it?
I don't think novelty is necessarily just novelty for novelty's sake is not necessarily a good thing. And usually ends up steering you awry. I think this had more – what they ended up doing, I think, had a lot more chances to go further awry than what it did, and I think it just broke even. You know, and the only – again, the only, like, reason I could, like, say, okay, well, if Moxley does not want interim next to his name, which I could understand if he's going to lose at All Out, in which case he would never have been, you know, quote unquote considered champion. Cause you know, that means that you never really beat him. Outside of that, I don't really, you know, it just, you could have done other things to further. And it is weird coming from me, cause I'm not a person who like is big into opportunity costs once you've already done something. But in this case, I'm, you know, going to be a hypocrite and say, yeah, I think you might have gained more doing something else. You didn't lose anything with this, but I think you could have gained a little bit more taking a different tact.
All right. And we'll close with Zach. Zach in Texas, that is.
Oh, I love this.
Yes, got to save it for the end here. Now that's a go-home show. I think we all owe Tony Khan an apology for doubting the reasons he went into this week without an announced main event, because the promos tonight for Mox and Punk sold everything beautifully. Mox came across as hot, confident, dominant champion, and that Punk promo is something special. I didn't know who Ace Steel was before tonight, but I had goosebumps. It felt real. The building was rocking. A home run of a segment. Now, the women's tag kicked so much ass, certainly better than the tournament finals on Raw on Monday. Speaking of the finals, the trio's tourney Dynamite final was nuts in the best way. Omega came without a shoulder brace and noticeably improved from his last match, so the story of his improvement continues. I don't know how anyone could watch this match and be down on the trios title. Really? After all Todd has explained? A shooting star Meltzer driver. We saw a shooting star Meltzer driver. What a match. Jungle Boy taking the Jack Perry name was a nice touch. And just one more thing. William Regal flirting with Excalibur is the best thing in wrestling commentary right now. Zach in Texas. What did he say to Excalibur? He wanted to gobble him up? I think was it?
Well, he said something and then thought wiser of what he was about to say, and then he said gobble up. So So because then JR said that's all, folks. Or that's what's the line from Animaniacs? I forgot what it was. I think it's all you know. That's all, folks. Because you know they got taken off the air, kind of thing. So I got a kick out of that whole – I do get a kick out of that.
Yeah, me too. Cool. Well, I mean, we're past 2 hours here, Javier. How about we wrap up unless there's anything else? I feel like we should go to Javier, but we already did. So.
Well, there's
what else is in your notes from the show we didn't cover?
Well, one thing is there's been talk that WB executives want them to cut back on language and they let an F-bomb slide through.
I don't think that was let. I think it was someone wasn't paying attention or expecting.
Well, yeah. I mean, not let. Yeah. Well, they did let it go through in terms of like not on purpose, but you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was meant. You know, and the thing is, that it's coming from an actual executive of the company, because which is like I think that's a little bit worse when it comes to that. And we didn't really talk about the women's tag team because I didn't get to make a really bad joke. If Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa were Thunderstorm, are Hikaru Shida and Toni Storm Shidstorm?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's not great.
I have to go for it. Hey, it's after midnight, Wade.
It is, yes.
Oh, I do have one question. Do you find it as interesting as I do that it is Sammy Guevara that's not on the card and Eddie Kingston is?
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know how much to read into it. Because I just don't know if there's an obvious other match for Sammy at this point.
Because, I mean, they were building up to Eddie versus
right,
Sammy.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Yeah. So,
and they could have sold some buys on that, you know, the shoot fight of the century. Jimmy Smith can come on and go, it's real, folks.
Yeah. So I'm assuming, I'm wondering because, Eddie Kingston apologized, and it was a classy apology, and then Sammy Guevara basically said something that pretty snarky back, and I'm wondering if it had something to do with that. Like, you know, he said, oh, you know, I shouldn't have known that I shouldn't have not gotten, you know. You know how kids are.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that was had something to do with that. But yeah, I mean, hey, we're getting Tomohiro versus Eddie Kingston. That might be fun.
Yeah, totally. All right, cool. Nice. Yeah, nothing else in your notes? I don't want to. You can't email later. We're done.
Yeah, I can't email later. I think that – let me just quickly I mean, nothing really important. I mean, I did like the Jericho promo with him clapping because I thought it was important for him to clap back on the idea that Owen and – was it Eddie? No, who are the two that they mentioned?
Owen and Stu.
Yeah, I thought it was important for Jericho to actually clap back on that because he's had a really successful career and if you're talking about like who's you know would they be proud of the overall career Jericho had, and it led into the story of like you know what does a wrestler mean because Daniel Bryan's you know point of view is like it's the in-ring work rate and an in-ring work rate I would say yeah. Daniel Bryan is the better wrestler, but like overall body of work in terms of when you talk about like everything else, I have to go with Jericho. So I like the fact that he clapped back with that and he mentioned that. So I thought that was good. Working against the fact that Jericho's heel, but you know, I mean, I thought it was important in terms to like you know for the whole legacy aspect of things. But
yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks everybody for calling, for emailing, for listening. And downloading and all that good stuff will be by later in the week for the SmackDown show. If you missed it, Jason Paul from ProWrestling.net joined me on the flagship yesterday. So it was a Tuesday flagship edition over on the Blue Logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast compared to this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post show. So hit refresh and download that. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you all next time.